Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're going to do a deep dive into proposed changes to workplace safety laws in Victoria. Specifically, we're looking at psychological health.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff.
Like, imagine a workplace where your mental well-being is given the same weight as physical safety. That's kind of what these regulations are aiming for, right?
Absolutely.
We've got this document outlining the proposed changes, and well, they've got some interesting stuff on what employers should be doing, like right now, to get ready.
Oh yeah, for sure. One of the big takeaways for me is how it makes it super clear that employers have a legal duty to protect their employees from psychological harm. Like, it's right there in black and white.
So it's not just a suggestion anymore.
Nope. This is serious stuff.
So that's huge. It basically puts psychological hazards on the same level as physical hazards, which means employers can actually be held accountable for things like bullying, harassment, or even just like crazy workloads.
Exactly. You know, things like bullying, sexual harassment, occupational violence, exposure to traumatic content, and high job demands. Those are the five key psychosocial hazards they highlight.
Five key psychosocial hazards. Okay, I'm seeing how this goes way beyond like just sticking up a poster about harassment.
Right.
But high job demands, like how do you measure that?
That's a great question. And the document actually gives some pretty good guidance on that. It really emphasizes the importance of looking at things like workload, obviously, but also like control over your work, support from supervisors and colleagues, and even just like how clear your roles and responsibilities are. It's about looking at the whole picture, the whole environment, and spotting those potential stressors before they cause harm.
Okay, so you're not just talking about long hours or tight deadlines. It's more about whether people feel supported and equipped to deal with those demands, is that right?
Exactly. And even though it's not, you know, legally required yet, the document really pushes for workplaces to have written prevention plans in place for each of those five hazards.
Prevention plans. Okay. So what are those exactly?
It's like a roadmap for how you're going to tackle these hazards in your workplace. It lays out how you'll identify them, assess them, and control the risks.
So it's kind of like a safety manual, but for, you know, for mental well-being.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So you'd have one for bullying, one for workloads, and so on.
Exactly. Each one needs to be specific to the hazard and the workplace, you know? It emphasizes that you got to involve employees in making these plans, too. After all, they're the ones actually dealing with these hazards every day.
Makes sense. Got to get everyone on the same page and working together to make things safer.
It's all about collaboration, you know, leadership, HR, employees, everyone.
Okay, so let's say a workplace has spotted a specific hazard, like we were talking about bullying.
Hmm.
What are some actual steps they can take to address that through the prevention plan?
Well, the document outlines this three-tiered approach, and it starts with, ideally, eliminating the hazard altogether.
Well, really?
Yeah, so that might mean redesigning jobs, changing work processes, or even, well, removing certain individuals from the workplace if needed.
Okay, so you're not messing around. It's not just about dealing with individual incidents of bullying. You're talking about going right to the root of the problem and making big changes to stop it from happening in the first place.
Exactly. But, you know, we all know that not every hazard can be completely eliminated. So the next level is substitution. Can you swap out a hazardous task or process for something less risky?
Hmm, I see.
Like maybe instead of only having face-to-face reporting for bullying, you could set up an anonymous system.
Yeah, that's a good example, thinking outside the box a bit.
Yeah.
So what if you can't eliminate or substitute? What then?
Then you go for engineering controls. Those are like physical changes or administrative changes that help minimize the risk.
I see.
For bullying, that could be stuff like super clear policies and procedures or mandatory training on how to, you know, behave respectfully in the workplace or even designated safe spaces for employees to go if they feel threatened.
So it's about putting safeguards in place. Like, it's like wearing a hard hat on a construction site. You're not getting rid of the risk of things falling, but you're at least protecting yourself.
Exactly. And these engineering controls are really important for managing psychosocial hazards. They create a sense of structure and predictability, which is crucial for these kinds of things.
Okay, that makes sense. But what if, even with all that, the hazard's still there? Is there anything else employers can do?
Well, that's where administrative controls and personal protective equipment come in.
Okay.
Administrative controls could be things like, you know, rotating shifts to reduce exposure to a hazard or giving employees more autonomy and control over their work.
I can see how that would be helpful, especially with those high job demands we were talking about earlier. Giving people more control over their schedules and workload can make a big difference to their stress levels.
Absolutely. And then finally, you have personal protective equipment, which in this context means the skills and resources that employees can use to protect themselves. Things like stress management techniques, resilience training, or even access to counseling services.
So it's about equipping employees with the tools they need to cope with difficult situations and protect their well-being.
Exactly. It's about empowering individuals to take control of their own psychological safety.
That's really interesting. This is all really helpful information. I'm getting a much better idea now of what workplaces need to do to prepare for these changes. But you mentioned earlier that WorkSafe has already been taking action against employers who aren't meeting their obligations when it comes to psychological safety. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. The document highlights a few recent cases where WorkSafe has actually prosecuted employers for, you know, failing to provide a psychologically safe work environment.
What, probably?
And the penalties have been pretty serious, like hefty fines and even jail time in some cases.
Whoa, okay, they're not messing around. Sounds like they're really cracking down on employers who aren't taking this seriously.
They absolutely are, which is a good thing. It shows that they're committed to protecting workers and making it clear that psychological safety is non-negotiable.
Yeah, I agree. I am curious, though, what kinds of situations have actually led to these prosecutions? Like, what kind of violations are we talking about here?
Well, some of the cases involved workplaces where there was, like, a really obvious pattern of bullying or harassment, and management just didn't do anything about it. Others were situations where employees were exposed to really traumatic events, like workplace violence or serious accidents, and the employer just didn't provide any support or resources afterwards.
So it's not enough to just have the policies in place. You have to actually enforce them and take action when something happens.
Exactly. It's about showing a real commitment to creating a culture of psychological safety, where employees feel supported, respected, and able to speak up about their concerns.
Yeah, that's really important. So what are some of the key takeaways from these prosecutions? Like, what lessons can other workplaces learn from these examples?
I think the biggest takeaway is that WorkSafe is serious about holding employers accountable for psychological safety. These prosecutions are proof that they're not afraid to take action if workplaces don't meet their obligations.
So the message is clear. Don't wait for something to happen before you take action. Be proactive.
Exactly. Put those prevention plans in place. Provide training. Foster a culture of respect and open communication, and be ready to respond effectively if and when issues come up.
This has been incredibly insightful. But before we move on, I want to go back to those five psychosocial hazards we talked about earlier. I'm particularly interested in high job demands. It seems like such a big issue these days, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little more about what that actually looks like in practice.
Sure. High job demands can show up in all sorts of ways, like excessive workloads and tight deadlines, obviously, but also things like lack of control over work processes and decision-making. It can even stem from unclear roles and responsibilities, leading to confusion and stress.
Right, so it's not just about the amount of work, it's about the type of work and the level of autonomy employees have, too.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that high job demands can affect people differently. What one person can handle might be overwhelming for someone else, depending on their skills, experience, and support systems.
That's a really good point. It's not one size fits all. Employers need to think about the individual needs of their employees when assessing job demands.
Exactly. And that's where those prevention plans are so helpful. They give you a framework for spotting those potential hazards, assessing the risks, and putting controls in place to reduce those risks.
So it's about being proactive and creating a work environment where employees feel supported and equipped to handle the demands of their job.
Exactly. And that brings us to another really important aspect of these proposed changes.
The document keeps talking about how important it is to involve employees. Why is that so important for psychological safety?
Well, because employees are the ones who are actually in the workplace every day. They're often the first to see potential hazards. And they've got really valuable insights into what would actually make a difference. Plus, when people feel like they're part of shaping their own work environment, it builds trust and a sense of ownership, you know?
No, it just makes sense to use that knowledge, right?
Yeah.
But since I'm an employee listening to this, and I'm thinking, okay, this all sounds good, but what if my workplace isn't doing any of this? Like, what can I actually do?
Well, first of all, remember, knowledge is power. Get to know these proposed regulations, check out the WorkSafe website, and understand what your rights are. Then don't be afraid to speak up. If you see something that just doesn't feel safe or you're going through a psychosocial hazard yourself, report it. Talk to your supervisor, HR, or a colleague you trust.
So it's about being proactive, sticking up for yourself and others. But what if those conversations don't lead anywhere? What then?
That's when knowing your rights is really important. The document's pretty clear. Employers have a legal duty to protect you from psychological harm. If your concerns aren't being addressed internally, you can always reach out to WorkSafe directly. They've got a confidential hotline and tons of resources on their website.
Okay, so there's backup if you need it.
Yeah.
But ideally, we want workplaces where it doesn't even get to that point, right? Where psychological safety is just part of the culture.
Exactly. And that's where leadership is absolutely crucial. This document is really clear on that. It's not just an HR issue. It's a leadership issue.
This is interesting. What does that actually look like in practice? How can leaders actually create that culture of psychological safety?
It starts with, you know, leading by example. Leaders who are open, approachable, respectful, they create an environment where others feel safe to be the same way. It's also about really listening to employees, taking their concerns seriously, and being open about decisions that affect their well-being.
So it's not just about talking the talk, it's about walking the walk.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about creating systems that support psychological safety, like having regular check-ins with employees, making space for feedback, and having clear policies on things like bullying, harassment, and managing workloads.
So it's like a whole mindset shift, right? Seeing psychological safety as something you invest in, not just a box to tick.
Absolutely. When employees feel safe and supported, they're more engaged, more productive, more innovative. It's good for everyone.
This all sounds really positive, but I can't help but think some employers might be a bit resistant to these changes, especially with the added responsibility and the possibility of legal action.
Yeah, you're right. Change can be tough. And some employers might hesitate to really embrace these new standards. But I think the document makes a strong argument for why psychological safety isn't just the right thing to do, it's also the smart thing to do.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more. Why is it good for business, not just ethically sound?
Think about it. When employees are stressed, anxious, or burnt out, they don't perform as well. They're more likely to make mistakes, have accidents, need time off, and that leads to lower productivity, higher costs, and it just hurts the bottom line.
So, not caring about psychological safety can actually hurt a company's profits.
Absolutely. But on the flip side, when employees feel safe, supported, and valued, they're more likely to be engaged, motivated, and productive. They're also more likely to stay with the company, which means lower turnover costs and a more experienced workforce.
So investing in psychological safety is actually investing in your business's success.
Exactly. It's about creating a workplace where everyone can thrive, both individually and as a team.
That's a powerful message. And it shows why these changes are so important.
They really are. They're a huge step towards recognizing just how important psychological well-being is in the workplace. And sure, there might be challenges, but I'm optimistic that these changes will lead to safer, healthier, and more productive workplaces for everyone in Victoria.
This has been a really insightful deep dive. But before we wrap things up, I want to leave our listeners with some concrete steps they can take to start improving psychological safety in their own workplaces, like right now. What can they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether you're the CEO or just starting out, everyone can play a part in creating a psychologically safe workplace.
Okay, so let's get practical. What can people actually do, like today, to make a difference?
Well, I'd say start by just paying attention. Are there any signs of stress, burnout, conflict in your team? You know, don't ignore those. Check in with your colleagues, offer support, encourage everyone to talk openly. Even small things like that, just being kind and understanding can really help build a more positive environment.
Yeah, it's about shifting the whole vibe, right? From like every man for himself to we're all in this together.
Exactly. It's about building that sense of community where everyone feels responsible for each other's well-being.
I like that. So what else can people do?
Become a champion for psychological safety, you know. Talk to your manager about trying out some of the stuff we've talked about today, like those prevention plans, regular check-ins, training on respectful behavior. You could even share some of the resources from WorkSafe with your team or suggest doing a workshop on stress management techniques.
So even if you're not a manager, you can still push for positive change.
Absolutely. And don't underestimate the power of just, you know, your own actions. Be respectful, listen to people, and be aware of your own stress levels and how they might be affecting others.
That's a good point. Psychological safety starts with each of us, taking care of ourselves and contributing to a supportive culture.
Exactly. These proposed changes in Victoria are a big deal. Psychological safety is finally getting the attention it deserves. And it's up to all of us to create workplaces where everyone feels safe, respected, and able to do their best work.
So well said. This has been a really insightful deep dive. I hope it's inspired our listeners to take action. Remember, even small changes can make a big difference. Start by having those conversations, pushing for change, and taking care of yourselves and each other. And if you need more information or support, check out the WorkSafe website. We'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into workplace psychological safety.